My Muscle Project, welcome back to this week, the after show. We have some exciting stuff coming. I hope everyone enjoyed those Black Friday sales. Actually, a big part of that was the launch of our new program, Squat Booster, which we are keeping open to a discount, a 30% discount till the end of December into the Christmas period. Very much like the Bench Booster. We just, just felt like it was time to build a program for the people that have chicken legs. I have chicken legs, so hoping
it's
that people...
It's that time of year, the turkey leg time of year.
I tell you what, squatting is just definitely one of those movements when it starts to feel really good, everything in your life is better. It's like when you get bigger legs and a stronger squat, I don't know, you just feel more powerful. I don't know, just not as frail. I know there is some research that's coming out there that's specifically on whole body leg training versus other styles of training, like upper body training and the health benefits of leg training. And there are much superior benefits to training your legs and getting your legs strong than there is to maybe like getting more pull-ups and that sort of thing. Like if you see a guy walking in the street and he's, you know, got really strong legs, you know, looks physically like he has really powerful, strong legs. It's a different kind of look to someone that looks like they're balancing on toothpicks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just like a different, I don't know, they just, even though their upper body might not be as developed, but developed legs, it's just, I don't know, there's some kind of genetic evolutionary component to strong legs that's like completely different.
I also feel like there's nothing more that makes you like turn away and look in disgust in the gym when someone is just coming up so slowly on a squat. When you just see someone and they're just, they're coming out of squat clean, whatever, and they just, you know, they're like going up, they're moving up from the ground at the slowest pace you've ever seen.
What do you mean? Oh, like they're weak.
They're weak and just so, so slow in their squat.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think what was cool about the Squat Booster program, it was kind of like a concoction of all the things that you tried when you were younger, which was really cool. And then some of the ideas that I explored, because it's always good mixing in someone that was really good at squats and then someone that's also really terrible at squats. I think that's why it makes like a pretty good blend. It's the same thing we did with the Bench Booster, right? Yep. I guess we're both pretty shit at bench press, so it's helpful. But yeah, I think when you get the blend of two worlds, someone that's really experienced, really good, and also someone that's been really terrible, you end up with a pretty good program. Definitely less volume than the bench program. I knew that I would, when we're riding it, that we'd need less, because just to set up the taxing on the nervous system, the muscles, the tendon, the joints, it just can't take as much as an upper body exercise.
100%.
And so I just kept the volume pretty low. And also because, you know, the promise was with these booster programs is you can add them in twice a week. It shouldn't take longer than 20 minutes to get it done. And you still see a substantial increase in your lift specifically. So if you guys go to themindmuscleproject.com/squat, you can check out the Squat Booster. If you're just looking for something that's really effective, really easy to follow. We had quite a few people message in that completed the Bench Booster program. The thing they said they liked about it the most was it's just so easy to add in.
Yeah.
Of all the programs you could start and add and finish and take away, it was just so simple, so convenient, so easy to understand. There was never an excuse. I think the worst thing is like you get excited about a program, you never do it.
Mm.
Like, oh, this is sick, but you just can't make it work.
Because then you don't even know if it worked.
Exactly. You just can't make it fit in. It's too long. It's too complicated. Spend too much time like trying to constantly pulling out your phone, reading it. With this one, it's so simple. You just memorize like four exercises and or three exercises for the day. You add them in, it's done.
And you know you're going to get better. And I would add as well, I mean, I think the Squat Booster, particularly even more than Bench Booster, if you add it into your program, there's got to be a slight boosting in how much you eat as well.
Mm.
But this is probably the perfect time of year.
I think naturally, though, it'll probably increase.
Mm.
Hey, you know that statistic you always bring up about how people put on weight around the holiday period and they spend most of the year? It's false. It's been debunked.
What?
Yeah, it's false data. Yeah, so...
It's devastating.
There was like this... because a few people have mentioned it. It wasn't just you. A few people have mentioned there's this... I don't know. I honestly don't even know where it came from. I don't know if it came legitimately from a study or if it was just an observation.
It's in a study. It was in... I don't think we ever actually had him on the podcast. I can't remember, but Stephen Guiney.
Okay.
And he has the book Wired to Eat.
Okay. Wired to Eat? Isn't that Rob Wolf's book?
Oh, yeah. You're right. You're right. It's a slightly different name.
Okay.
I'll get it.
Yeah, there was some... he may have falsified the data. It was something about like adults in the holiday period, they put on 15 pounds of body weight and they spend the whole year working it off, but they never managed to recuperate the 15 pounds. And so it's like a compounding effect over the years, adding, you know, net 4 pounds or net 2 kilos just because of the holiday period. So the theory was if you can minimize the damage in a holiday period, you'll set yourself up for success for the rest of the year. It's actually not true. I think they the Mind Pump guys were reading some stuff off where they brought up some different research and people were studying it. And the average weight gain of the average American over the holiday period is only 1.5 pounds.
Yeah, that was in the book though. It's only, what they were saying is 2.5 pounds and you lose like about half of that.
Oh, it's a small amount.
Yeah, it's a small amount.
Right, okay. So maybe the 15 pounds is just like a myth, mythology. Yeah. It's just like something you use to scare your clients.
So the book is The Hungry Brain.
Okay.
Yeah, he was about 2.5 pounds and you lose like, it wasn't a whole pound. It was 0.8. So I think it was like people average out like 1.6 pounds.
Yeah.
But that's every year. So, you know, in 10 years, you can still gain quite a lot of weight.
Right. So what, like, okay, like we didn't have this written for the show today, but what would you do, you know, this time of year, what advice do you give to your clients that, or what advice do you give to anyone really that wants to minimize the damage they're going to do at social events in the holidays?
It's a good question. There's a couple of tactics. I think there's one overall tactic, more of a strategy for the entire holiday period, which is just going into the holiday period with some sort of plan, particularly if I think like weight management and stuff like that is an issue for you. Because the worst one is that people have this like weird idea that, you know, the rules don't matter for this period of time, which is silly. So they have this like kind of strange story in their head and it's like, you know, it's all good over the Christmas, New Year's period because like, you know, it's a one-off during the year.
Right.
But it's a bad strategy because it just like sets you up to kind of go crazy for like too long of a period. It's one thing to go crazy for an hour. It's one thing to go crazy for 2.5 weeks.
Yeah.
So just like going in with some intention around the rules, but okay, I'm just going to stick to my diet as normal. But there'll be like these 4 social events where I know it's going to be different. And that is something you can work with rather than just like how the whole holiday period is completely a write-off.
Okay, but explain more of a tactical approach.
And then in the actual individual events, the number one way is I think it's a disaster going into these sort of events starving. Going into these sort of events, consuming as much basically protein as you can going into the event, I usually see successful because you're fuller. You know, your macros, that's usually the macronutrient you're going to get the least of when you go to the event. You're probably going to have loads of carbs and fat because it's just the nature of the event. So going in with like just high protein, low carb, low fat sort of day usually gives you the best setup for success.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jim Wendley used to have this thing and it was like, you can eat a pizza, but you got to have 3 scoops of protein shake beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds silly, but it does tend to work because it just like takes the massive edge off, like I'm going to eat this whole pizza.
Yep.
And it turns it into, I'll have like a quarter of this pizza and I'll be good.
Yep. No, absolutely. I mean, in reality, though, it's not, unless for our American listeners, which is most of you, if you take that Thanksgiving out, then really you're only looking at like, 2 to 3 days of major eating. We've got Christmas, potentially Christmas Eve, and New Year's. That's not that much in terms of calories. But I think where the damage gets done, it's all the drinking, the social drinking that's around.
Yeah, it's like the work holidays. Christmas party, exactly. This party, this thing.
Just more meeting. Okay, so we're off work, so let's catch up with these friends, let's catch up with this friend, and you drink, and you drink, and you drink. And it's interesting because I was out on Saturday night. It was Ev's, Jim's first Christmas party. Everyone gets a first Christmas party. It's always very legendary for many reasons. And this one in particular, we were having a discussion with, and I can't remember who the people were that we're having a discussion with. We're talking about the social acceptance of not drinking because, you know, back in the day, if you didn't drink, like when we were growing up, if you chose not to drink, it was taboo. It was like, you're the weirdo. You're exiled. You feel a lot of social pressure to drink. That's, a reason why. And look, to be honest, when most people start drinking, they don't like the taste of alcohol, you know. It takes a while to kind of develop that taste. The same with coffee as well. Like first time you have coffee, you don't really enjoy it that much. That's why when you're a kid, you drink like the triple caramel
espresso just whipped cream. Take the foam off the top.
Yeah. You got the coffee flavored sugar drink. And basically, you know, it's changed a lot. You know, I think in Australia in particular, because it's such a health orientated community. Well, really the concentrations of like Sydney and Melbourne, I would say. You know, we are a fitness hub. We're very health conscious. It has become a lot more socially acceptable to say like, no, I don't drink. Now, I think there's a lot of factors that weigh in on that. I think if anyone's read any sort of articles or statistics about Sydney, they take a ton of recreational drugs, the most per capita in the entire world. And I think maybe that's kind of a part of it has been the factor of, okay, I don't want to drink because of the calories associated with it. And there's no calories associated with drug taking, right? So people still want the disinhibition with, you know, not taking narcotics, right? Or drinking in excess. But they obviously want to keep their physique. So that's kind of been a bit of a replacement there. So people can say, oh, no, I don't drink, right? But they get messed up in another way. And then, you know, for, and then the other side of things is also, I think that, yeah, just generally, the more people you, that you just have banding together saying, oh, I don't drink, the just more acceptable it is. People get up early, they go to the cafe, they like to watch the sunrise, all that sort of stuff. It's around the beach. They want to start their Sundays early. And so most people, you know, they don't have their whole Saturday written off. I mean, part of it's also been the lockout laws, right? Which kind of hurt the city as well. For those of you listening who didn't know, Sydney basically had this thing called lockout laws, which are getting lifted in January. But essentially what it meant is the whole city wraps up and is in bed by midnight. There's no partying outside of your house beyond midnight. So it's just kind of been interesting to see how the landscape sort of changed. Very health focused. And then it's kind of put a little bit of a dent in people's social life. But I think in overall, it's been better for people's health. At the end of the day, it does still fall on the individual to manage it themselves. Now, coming back to the holiday thing and drinking, what I generally say for people that do this advice is sometimes it can be, it's kind of like, how I like to compare it is when you go out and you want to go shopping, but you know, if you just go in there and you have no idea how much money's in your account, you have no idea how much you're going to spend, you usually end up in a worse situation because then you choose the path of ignorance, and that's when the most damage gets done. If you go into something where you're a lot more clear, a lot more calculated, then you're going to make smarter decisions. Now, let me give you the example, right? You go, it's Boxing Day, Christmas sales. Someone gives you $500 in cash, right? And you have no other money. You don't have your phone. You don't have cards. You don't have an Apple Watch, nothing. You have $500 cash, and they're like, okay, go buy what you want. Now, think about how strategic you're going to be with your purchases, right? You might go around to all the shops and you might pick all the things you want and do the maths and you go, okay, I can afford this, can't afford that, do this, do that. You make a very calculated decision about what you're going to buy and what you're going to spend it on and how much you're going to have left over as well. Now, do the same thing with calories, right? Say you want to try and consume. Now, this might seem like it's far-fetched, but it can be very helpful. And once you do it once, it doesn't take long to do it like intuitively the next time. So say you want to go out and you don't want to drink more than 600 calories worth of alcohol, because you know that 1,000 calories worth of alcohol is significantly over your maintenance calories, right? And you do a lot more damage there. So you just add up what drinks, you just go on Google and you type, I mean, how many types of drinks are you going to drink overnight? Not heaps, unless you're a savage, but usually you have maybe two, maybe three different types of drinks. You have like a shot, you might have a beer, and you might have some kind of mixed drink. Maybe every now and then someone has like some fancy, I don't know, mixed cocktail or something. And you add up those calories, and then those calories is kind of like your limit. So you're like, okay, cool. I can have like three beers and two shots. And then that keeps me within 600. Now, every drink after that, you know that you're doing serious damage or damage that you weren't planning on doing. The same way that like if you spent the $500 and then someone gave you a credit card and go, yeah, you can keep spending, but you're going to do like serious damage to your savings right now. There's a different level of understanding than, oh, you know, I think I'm under, oh, I don't think it's that much. And just in that like world of ignorance, that's when I think most of the damage gets done. So if you have that kind of clarity and you do some basic maths before these sort of events, then I think overall you end up a lot better.
Yeah, I think the reality is when you go out and you drink, most of the damage in terms of calories is done through food and not actually always through the drinking.
Right.
Because for a lot of people, it's like you drink like whatever, four or five drinks, but then you go and you eat so much extra food that you had no plans on eating it at a time. You're just normally not even eating.
It's also the food you eat the next day. If you're a little bit hungover as well, you crave shit food. Everyone's experienced that. And yeah, it's the same thing. You just kind of do yourself a disservice the next day. So look, there's lots of different strategies, but try that strategy, I think, because it gives you the flexibility to kind of drink whatever you want and eat whatever you want, but you're just making a lot more conscious decisions with everything that's going there. Now, you participated in another endurance event. Every week, I feel like I'm talking about an endurance event with you. Tell us about this event.
So this one was, well, I guess if you know in Australia, you know Bondi to Bronte, very famous beaches. But if you are overseas, you don't. I think it's meant to be 2.5 kilometers. But it kind of varies every year because like the course changes and where they put their cones is different. Because they try and like make it all as safe as possible. But basically you're like swimming out of the beach, around the head, past one beach, and then you go around the head and you arrive at Bronte Beach.
Anyone ever been eaten by a shark? Has a shark sighting ever happened in that?
No one has definitely ever got eaten.
Okay.
But I definitely thought about it a lot and I kept my eyes open for the sharks.
Yeah, just in case.
But
so you spot them before
they
get
you. Did not have a huge strategy of what I would do when the shark came at
me. But you can't do anything, right?
No, you kick him in the face. Everybody knows that. Kick him in the face, dude.
Okay.
Apparently, a lot of surfers do survive kicking them in the face. Like, really? Apparently, if you kick them really hard in the face, like, the sharks go away.
Oh. Okay.
So that's the strategy. But I don't really know how that works because their mouth opens and maybe your foot just ends up in their mouth.
kick their organs.
But anyway, I did this last year and it was one of the worst experiences of my life last year. Took me 1 hour and 9 minutes of struggling through this ocean.
Fuck, that's a long time for me. How many times did you float on your back to recover?
Never, because I can't float.
Oh, you can't.
I never ever do that. Okay. It's just constant struggle.
Yeah.
Anyway, I went in this year and I was like, okay, I'm just going to go in, and swimming is such a struggle for me. I was like, I'm just going to just watch my mindset, see when the panic sets in, just try and stay relaxed.
Are you doing freestyle?
Yeah. Well, I mix in a lot of breaststroke as well. Okay. I need recovery.
Yeah.
And anyway, it was like a lot windier, like bigger waves this time. And I reckon I was probably like 25 meters into this, and I was like, no, turn back, fuck this.
25 meters,
so close to shore. So close, because it was way bigger waves this time.
Yeah, but like, once you're out past the head, the waves still be
they go away, but it was just a lot choppier than last year.
Yeah,
as well.
Okay, yeah.
But anyway, eventually got into it, and then you like go through so many different emotions. At one point I'm like, this is so much easier than last year, I'm so close, don't even feel like I'm going very long. 5 minutes later, you're like, I think I'm going backwards. Because I really had this fear. I was like, I think the wind is coming at me. And if I'm not swimming faster than the wind, yeah. I remember that.
Ross Edgley, bro.
I was like, I could be going backwards. Mm. Imagine if I just ended up back at the beach I started with. What everyone would say. Anyway, I slowly worked my way all the way through this. And the funniest bit was I was basically in one age group, 25 to 29. Last year, I came last in the age group. And this time, there was this one guy who, I'm telling you, just stayed 10 meters ahead of me for the entire race. It was like, I just look up, no matter where I was, see the same hat right in front of me. So
This year.
So we had a 1 hour race and I ended up beating him by about 1 meter.
Oh, wow.
As it came into the shore.
Do you race to the finish on foot? Or do you
but it's like 3 meters.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a 3 meters and it's a very, very poorly run 3 meters because I'm so dizzy and sick by the end of it.
Oh, you get sick at the end of it. Do you feel nauseous?
I feel really sick from like, also so rocky, and then heaps of times I'd go up for air and I'd get salt water in my mouth.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not easy, that ocean water. It's like,
it's really different
to the pool. Anyway, came in an hour.
So that's 20 minutes faster than last year.
No. 9 minutes.
Altogether. 9 minutes.
Right. 9 minutes faster. But
still a long time.
But most people went slower.
Because of the conditions.
Yeah. So most people were like 10 minutes slower who were like kind of my speed.
Right.
In the race.
So when you said you got last in your age group, you also got last in the whole event last year.
No, last year I came sixth last overall, but there is a disabled category, and I think four of the people I beat were in the disabled category. You can look up my results. And anyway, this year beat this guy in my category, which is very satisfying. Made it a whole thing. I feel a lot better.
Nice.
But man, the thing about the swimming is it's so different. But when you struggle on something like that, your heart rate stays so high.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking back through my whoop, and it's one of the highest strain events I've ever had.
Wow.
It was like, because my
what max, was your day strain?
My max heart rate, it was like 19.
Wow.
My max heart rate is about 185. So, it's the highest I've ever got on the whoop. And I've like pushed it as hard as I can.
Yeah.
In this swim, and I was trying to stay relaxed. Like, I was really trying to swim slow.
Yeah, yeah.
My average heart rate was 163
Fuck.
For 1 hour and 5 minutes.
So, it's 20 beats off your max.
Yeah.
And when you touch your max, you don't touch for very long.
No.
30 seconds.
Maximum.
To 2 minutes. Yeah.
It is this non-stop struggle.
Fuck. You reckon it's partly to do with probably the oxygen deprivation as well, right? Because you're like not a super efficient breather and swimmer, so just anything.
You're always going through like massive breaths.
Yeah.
And then holding your breath and then another massive breath.
I'm sure it'd be like if you did, because we never took data on it, but it would be like doing the same movement in, like I would love to get data on say like 30 unbroken toes to bar, for example, right? Like a sort of CrossFit specific movement when we first started. I didn't really do them anymore, but what 30 would take, you know, when we first start out and what your heart rate's at versus 30 when you are more experienced and more relaxed, because it's a huge difference in the efficiency. Same exact movement, same movement patterns, but just the efficiency, the muscle memory, just way less cognitive effort. Like how much are you thinking when you're swimming about your stroke and your kick and stuff or not?
Well, when I'm not thinking about not dying, then I'm...
You're thinking about technique, right?
Constant, yeah.
Yeah. Most good swimmers aren't thinking about technique.
Well, that's what they talk about in why... We heard Joel Jameson on the podcast talking about why when you like get better and better, you start doing more and more training, your calorie expenditure doesn't go up and up and up that much. because think about, I would have burnt so many calories in that time. But then as you get really good at swimming, an hour of swimming, you actually don't burn that many calories.
Yeah, yeah.
Because my heart rate might have been like 120.
Yeah.
115. And it was actually pretty effortless, yeah.
It's a study they did in the, it's pretty famous, people, most people bring it up. It's one of those, African tribes, traditional African tribes, and they do like, 50,000 steps a day or something. They're like on their feet all day, and they measured them thinking that, oh, you know, these guys are going to have a calorie burn somewhere. We estimate at 6,500, 7,000 calories a day. And they measure them, and it's the same as us.
It's like 2,500.
Their bodies are just so efficient at this exercise, because it'd be ridiculous. Imagine those guys having to survive trying to eat in a country and in an environment where it's not, you know, the access to calories is not high. Mm. There's not many processed foods around. They're on their feet everywhere. They're not using, you know, transportation like we are. Then it would just make no sense if their body was burning that many calories. They would all die of starvation. They would wither away. There's no way you could, you know, eat that many calories and still move that much. And so, yeah, the body has this inbuilt kind of mechanism where no matter how much activity you're doing, eventually it's going to kind of cap out at this kind of top end. That was a good experience. So what did what did the Whoop say you needed in terms of like sleep?
Actually, it was good. Day? So I went on after. I was like, oh, I've got to see how this went.
What was your recovery going in?
How pretty good. It was like 50%, 55% in the orange. And as soon as I looked at it after, it's like Whoop recommends a nap today. I was like, fuck yeah.
And then what was it the next day? What was your recovery score the next day?
Pretty good. It was like 77%.
Yeah. Oh, it went up.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
But I had a very relaxing day the rest of the day. So, I had a nap and then I had a full-time sleep. So, it was like a lot more sleep than I regularly have.
So, interesting observation on my end. I'm a little bit stressed at the moment. Got a few things going on. But what I had was... this is something that you won't ever know unless you are tracking it, like something like this. And I was thinking to myself, you know, I feel like my sleep has not been great. I can't really get into the green at the moment. I've been red in the recovery. But because you're just so wrapped up in, you know, you wake up, you get going, you're just wrapped up in your day-to-day, you're trying to go to sleep roughly the same time, wake up roughly the right time, you're not paying too much attention to it. And I think that's generally how people start kind of slipping away with their good habits, or then they realize, oh, wow, shit, I feel like shit, or I'm injured or whatever, because they're not tracking it. And the differences are so small, but they just compound over many weeks that they don't realize. But when you track something like this, it brings your awareness to it before it gets to that stage. And I've been averaging, so sleep hours versus sleep needed, averaging 6 hours, 24 minutes, averaging need 9 hours, 28.
No, that's gone up because you've been getting less.
Yeah. So, my sleep performance, only 67%. Mm. My time in bed is 7 hours, 7 minutes. So, I need to add basically an extra hour of time in bed, I think, to improve my sleep. So, yeah, that... Like, if I saw that in a client, I'd be like, dude, you are not sleeping enough. It's no wonder you aren't recovered, or you're not seeing progress, or you keep getting injured. And now I'm like, hey, this is me. So, just that is enough to make me want to make a change. And I did. I went to bed earlier, got more sleep last night. I feel a little bit better. And I think that's the value in the tool. Because, you know, you guys always ask and listen to questions, oh, is this tool better than this? Is this better than that? At the end of the day, I just tell people, it's whatever tool is going to get you to make a change. Like, if Whoop has the most accurate recovery data, the best HRV scores, the most up-to-date technology, but you don't change anything about what you do, then it's not a useful tool. It's just, like Trevor said, it's another thing that can cause you a significant amount of anxiety, because it's just telling you what you're not doing. So, whatever tool you use, it just needs to get you to make change. And that's the real key. And that's what you want out of any tool. And so, yeah, that's... for us, it's Whoop. For you, it might be something else. I don't know what it is, but it's whatever gets you to make a change. That's what matters.
There's also what you realize, like, when you delve into this, so much of how you spend your day affects your sleep.
Yeah.
And you don't really see that until maybe you track it. Like, even you could just track it with a pen and paper, like, in every single day, or you have some sort of app or whatever that does it. But it's astonishing. Like, I noticed that the time of day I train, I think, has a big effect on sleep.
Huge.
Consistent, not even obviously everybody knows what you have for dinner, like big meals and stuff like that affects your sleep, but even I think your whole eating pattern over a day can affect your sleep as well.
Right.
It's literally just like it's everything.
Yeah.
Everything goes into it.
Yeah. It's the rhythms that your body sets itself in. Like, I know, because I play in the basketball comps on Sunday nights, the average game time's around 8 p.m. I won't sleep till midnight.
Yeah.
At least.
100%. You should be the same when I play Friday night rugby. Yeah. Once you get that adrenaline going at 6,
you
7
can't
p.m.,
wind
you need
down.
6 hours.
Yeah, you just can't. And it's almost made me, I'm going to pick a new league just because of that.
Yeah.
It's like, it ruins it. Because, you know, Monday's the day you want to wake up and feel sharp, right?
Yeah.
Got a bunch of meetings, we're meeting with the team, blah, blah, blah. And I just feel flat. Mm. I feel so flat because I'm trying to meditate. I've got the lights down. I've got candles. You know, I'm reading. It doesn't help. Doesn't fucking do anything. Doesn't do shit. I'm still there on the couch sweating in aircon. I've got the aircon as low as it can go and I'm still sitting there sweating and I'm just thinking, it's ridiculous. I can't get to sleep. So I've got to change something.
Yeah, if you're an evening trainer, you need to be insanely dialed in with your evening routine to bring it down. I think if you're a morning trainer, my experience, it doesn't matter that much. When I like train in the morning, it's like you're just tired.
Yeah.
You're just like pretty tired, but then you even get cool and you just fall asleep.
Yeah.
I'm not saying morning training is for everyone, but if you are an evening trainer, you need to be like spot on with what happens after your training.
Exactly. Different considerations, that's all. Cool. All right, let's jump into the listener questions for this week. Guys, thank you for always shooting in listener questions. If you have listener questions, I know actually a few people have been shooting me some listener questions through through my daily email, which a lot of people have been enjoying. If you guys haven't checked out the infamous daily email, it's actually caused quite a bit of controversy recently. We've had some interesting feedback, I'm just putting in some unfiltered thoughts for everyone. So if you go to the mymuscleproject.com/thedaily, no space, then you can get my regular daily email and see what all the controversy is about. That feedback that I sent you the other day was good.
We're getting rough feedback. The good thing about email is that only we see the feedback.
Yeah. Yes.
You can't CC in everyone that gets the email.
Yeah, but yes. And some people have been replying back to that with some listener questions as well. So we appreciate everyone that the messages in their questions.
Okay. So question one, Ben Haste. Definitely English. Yep. Hi, chaps. No one Australian says chaps. Yeah. I've been following your podcast for the last year. I think the information is really useful. Getting amazing results. Awesome. I am 28 years old, 6'2", 92 kilos. Farmer from Suffolk, UK. I've spent the last 8 years doing nothing but work and fucking loving it, but it wasn't until I took a long, hard look in the mirror 12 months ago and mistaken myself for a 35-year-old. And I was like, shit, probably haven't done a lot for myself apart from build a business. If I put as much energy into my exercise as I do into my business, I might be able to get somewhere I've never been before. Always been pretty active, but never as big as I used to play quite a bit of rugby and gave it up to chase a career stupidly. 12 months in, I'm feeling as good as I have for years and have stripped down from 110 kilos to 92 kilos with good diet and researching most of the guests you have had on your show. So thank you. Where's the actual question?
I don't know.
But that's enough shit about me. Basically, I want to know what is the best training shoe.
Probably could have skipped to that part.
I spent a lot of time on my assault bike and my actual mountain bike. A lot of weights, but not really a shoe guy. I like to work at the gym, so no shoes. Don't really know. Yeah, he wants basically best all-round shoe.
Oh, shoe. Okay,
for training shoe. Yeah.
Shit, that was a long way to ask about a shoe.
Good story though, Ben.
Yeah, it's a good story. His business he's a farmer? Is that what he said?
That's what he was, and now he's built some sort of business, doesn't reveal what
was
it is.
Was a farmer, okay.
Rule out a shoe business, because he wants the best shoe.
Yeah. Man, we tried a lot of shoes. I think we've reviewed, or we've gone into this sort of in-depth detail before. It's worth covering off again. At the end of the day, it depends on your budget, because I still think there are really good shoes out there that are, you know, decent price, $100-$150. But, you know, you put them through the works and they're pretty much done in 6 months.
Yep.
So,
easily.
It depends how, like, what your budget is in this sort of stuff. Now, also depends on the training is a big factor. There are so many different... I think I wish the question was a bit more specific, because then we could kind of understand what
he basically goes to the gym and he assault bikes and mountain bikes.
Yeah, so he's not running. So, you'd rule out all kind of heel lifts and running shoes. So, you'd want something pretty flat. And then, yeah, in terms of, I think if you just pick a ballpark budget of like $150 to $200 on a pair of shoes, I think you're really tossing out between the Reebok and the Nike. They've kind of proven themselves to be pretty untouchable. I know Under Armour, we reviewed their shoe. I think it's the Train or something. Under Armour Train 3.0, something like that. Now, that's kind of their first stab at the functional fitness shoe, the gym shoe. They have the Rock shoe as well. Man, it's just as good, to be honest. I think most people just end up choosing Nike because Nike's a cooler brand. It just looks better. People are just more pumped to be Team Nike. And I get it. It's not necessarily more or less comfortable. It depends on your foot than the Reebok or the Under Armour shoe. it just looks better. And at the end of the day, that's a lot of the reason. It's like protein, right? Most people, what is the number one deciding factor on protein sales? Is taste. It's not necessarily like this is better digesting, or this mix is better, or this has more grams of protein, less grams of fat, or whatever. And that's all part of it for sure. But it's taste. And I think when it comes to shoe, it's look. Yep. You know, like you look at the barefoot shoes that you wear. I would wear those shoes more often, but they look like shit. Problem. And yeah. I just can't bring myself to wear them all the time, even though I know they're better for my feet. So it's funny because we're kind of irrational in that way. We know that, oh, you know, my future would be better if I have stronger feet and more mobile feet and something that's not destroying my feet. But I don't want to look bad in public. So I want to fit in a bit more. So I'm going to choose something that's a bit more aesthetic.
You got to get a middle ground.
Yeah. So... yeah, I mean, the shoes I got on right now, it's like an Under Armour kind of casual shoe. They're really soft on the top, so it allows like your toes to spread out and stuff. But, you know, it's not that flat as well, so you don't get much ground contact. But I just know that, and I try and spend more time with my feet on the ground at home.
You know what I would add is that I think that in general as well, people put a bit too much emphasis on the training shoe and too little emphasis on what they spend the rest of their day in.
Because
They'll spend like a lot of time like, oh, what's the best shoe, you know, for my feet and everything while I'm training, but you're only training maybe, what, an hour a day, 4 hours in a week, maybe 5 hours in a week. So it's really the shoe you spend most of your time in that, you know, changes your feet for better or worse the most.
Yeah.
So that's where I think most people get results by like choosing a really good shoe in like whatever shoe you're wearing most of your day. And it doesn't have to be some crazy shoe. It might just be a work shoe, but getting like a really good quality work shoe, I think is just a very smart investment.
Yeah.
Because if you squish your toes together all day, you put on whatever, like $3,000 Nikes, for 40 minutes, what difference does it make? Doesn't matter. So you got to get a really good shoe for the rest of your day.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a tool, right? The shoe is just a tool. At the end of the day, I think you're ultimately going to pick something based on, like I said, between the Nike, the Under Armour and the Reebok, they're all just as sturdy as each other. You're going to pick something based on what feels comfortable on your foot and what looks good.
And I want to add one more thing. So, you know how people get a lot of like sales sometimes at this time of year? They're like, where you get heavily discounted Nike shoes. Like, you know, whatever, half price because it's like something's wrong with it.
Yep.
I was hearing someone say what a bad idea it is to get those shoes because often people are like, oh, you know, just like the label has got like some small error on it. So, I got it for like a third of the price it normally would be.
Yeah, I've never heard that, but anyway.
But anyways, I was on this podcast.
Where the fuck do you find those sort of shoes?
I don't know. I've never got them. But I think in like, if you even go to like Athlete Locker or something, sometimes they're like, oh yeah, like we got this one. It's like exactly the same, but...
You mean Foot Locker?
Foot Locker, whatever, yeah. shoe store. But what they were saying is that those shoes cause like the biggest problems with people because often they also have like a genuine problem in the shoe. And people get like crazy injuries from them because like maybe the heel is like slightly lower on one side or the other side. And it leads to like pronating on one foot, not the other foot.
Yeah.
And they were saying like, cause they run a, podiatry, they'll get people in and they end up spending like thousands of dollars fixing like these massive injuries that have been caused from discounted shoes.
Right. That's interesting. I didn't know that. Oh, the other thing as well you guys want to know about is like Noble and Strike. We've had both those, founders on the podcast. We have Carl on as well. They're both great shoes as well. Obviously these are startup companies. So they kind of built something a little bit more from scratch. And yeah, look, I've heard people, they don't complain about them. They like them as well. At the end of the day, guys, they're all really good. Like they are all really good. It's just all the other factors around it that we brought up that are really important to consider.
Okay. We have a question here and I can't see the name. Hi, gents. An after show question for you. About 4 years, they've put on about 17 to 18 kilos of lean mass. Was very skinny in high school. Now they're around the 97 to 98 kilo mark. So I'm guessing they started at what, like 70 kilos?
Yeah.
Sorry, 80 kilos. Started at 80, they've gained nearly all the way to 100, but now having trouble pushing through the 98 kilo mark without eating heaps of rubbish and gaining fat. Any tips for someone looking to push past the lean muscle sticking point? It's probably more of a question for you because I think you've been the same journey.
They don't have a name, do they?
Here we go. Connor Thompson.
Connor Thompson. Good question, Connor. Well, I mean, you put on a lot of weight, so you clearly know how to put on muscle mass. So I don't think me telling you anything new about muscle building strategies is going to necessarily get you through to the next stage. But look, let me just share some of the insights that work for me and work for some of my clients over the years, the clients we have at the gym, and maybe there's something in there that you haven't done before. Now, I think there's definitely a huge misconception about the amount of calories that you need to consume in order to gain weight. The truth is, you are much better off consuming, you know, 300 to 500 calories more than you need per day and slowly gaining muscle than you are trying to, you know, do 1,200, 1,500 calories above what you need, you know, doing what they, quote unquote, you know, when we grew up, the dirty bulk, right? Putting on as much mass as possible. Gaining lots of body fat is not healthy. And so...
Also just makes it harder because then you got to lose it later.
Exactly. And once you grow fat cells, a lot of the research is suggesting that you don't ever lose them and you just shrink them.
Yeah, or it takes like 10 years or 20 years.
Yeah. So I wouldn't go that excess. It's not always about more food. You may be in a calorie surplus. It may just be time to change your training significantly. You may need a new stimulus in your training to... kind of push through. Now, I will say as well, I feel like there is a bit of a genetic ceiling when it comes to gaining weight before you kind of reach the stage where you need anabolics. And I think a lot of really advanced lifters that have kind of hit this ceiling, you know, I'd say that you probably hit it if you've been training consistently on the weights at least 3 to 4 times per week for about a decade. I'd say that's kind of when you enter that kind of threshold. And you've tried multiple different training styles, then... Most people will say, yeah, it's like, you know, I stalled out really hard, you know, tried all this, tried all that, but the most I could put on was say like 0.5 kilo to 1 kilo a year. And that's when most people still want to put on 2 or 3 kilos. So they turn to anabolics, which, you know, everyone can make their own decisions on that stuff. That's fine. No judgment. But you may be at that genetic ceiling. You may be getting really close there. And then in order for you to push through that, I'm not suggesting to use anabolics, but I'm just saying you may need to set your expectations a lot lower than the last 17 kilos. And you may only be able to add on 0.5 kilo to 1 kilo a year for the next 10 years, which if you add that up, that's significant. But it does mean you need to dial yourself in extremely well in what you're doing. Now, dialing yourself in could just mean just making sure you don't really miss training sessions, making sure you stay injury free. You absolutely need to be getting a lot of sleep in order to bulk because, you know, you're trying to build, you know, more tissues and that requires a lot of sleep. And then you also need to make sure that you're doing things like, you know, having creatine every day or most days and, you know, making sure that when you, you're like with your training sessions, you're continuing to progress and put weight on the bar and that sort of stuff and deloading at the right times. You just need to be really consistent. And then it's always a question of like, okay, how much time do I want to dedicate to this? How important is it to me bulking up? You know, you put on 17 kilos, you're 98 kilos. I don't know how tall you are, but that's a lot of weight. Like you're a big guy now. I mean, how much bigger do you want to be? Is it 100% necessary? Like, are you a strong man? Are you like a competitive bodybuilder? Or were you like me where you kind of have this unidentified insecurity that you constantly feel like you need to get bigger and bigger and bigger because you feel like the more kilos you put on, the happier you'll be. But at the end of the day, you realize, oh, it's got nothing to do with that. No one actually cares if I'm bigger. I'm the only one that cares. And the person that I'm trying to prove to kind of go to their face like, oh, you said I was skinny, now look at me, I'm fucking jacked, like they don't give a fuck. Okay, they made one comment, you know, when you were 14 and you took it to heart and it dictated the next 10 years of your life. I'm not saying that's the case, but I'm saying that's what it was for me. So sometimes, you know, it's like, okay, how much bigger do I really need to get before it's like, what the fuck's the point, you know? Or maybe there's some other issues here. Maybe there's it's not about more weight, maybe it's about identifying some kind of insecurity or problem and just being okay with it and just not having to worry about it so much. But yeah, it sounds like you need to change something up a little bit, move the training around, dial things in a little bit more, potentially go through a cutting phase and so that you kind of get a bit of a reset there metabolically. Yeah, different training program, more strength training, maybe more hypertrophy training. I don't know, could be time to mix it up a little bit. I think as well, you probably find that if you've been a bit heavier now for a while, that you can go through a period of less calories and different training and maybe some more endurance work and you might only lose 1 or 2 kilos.
Yeah.
It won't fall off like you think it might. You know, I did lose a little bit of weight in this cut. I lost like 3 kilos. But I'm sure if I eat in excess again and start doing heavy strength training again, it'll come back on pretty quickly.
I really think anabolics is time for it. I think it is.
Raph's giving it to you straight. I gave you the long-winded answer.
Just be honest with yourself. If you want to keep going, you got to keep going.
The mymuscleproject.com/testosterone for your free delivery.
Okay, last question. Steve_987. Raph, what activities or sports will you have your child do in the early developmental years in order to ensure he is a super athlete later in life?
He's going to be a super athlete. You don't want it to be an intellectual, do you?
He's, nah.
You're going to make the decision for him.
No, we've already got it all sorted. I've got the basketball hoop in the back.
Nice.
He's going to be an incredible basketball player.
That's because there's so much money in basketball and you realize that there's no concussions involved.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it'll be such a good story when he's like, 5'7" player, reaches the NBA. There actually is a YouTube video you can see of the shortest ever NBA player. It's like 5'6".
Muggsy Bogues, I think.
Yeah, he is just freak show. Because you know you're good if you're 5'6" and you're in the NBA.
Oh, yeah, you're
a freak. You are so good.
Yeah, you're a freak. Yeah. You're compensating for so much in that league.
You're such a good player.
Yes.
Anyway, yeah, in terms of, I think what with this question is, I thought about it, and it's not about doing like anything special, right? Like doing new things that's going to make this person a really good athlete. It's more about just taking away all the things that screw up, basically, kids, right?
That's a good point.
Because there are a lot of them. And it's not really for the goal of making someone a super athlete. I do think that you know, because 99.99% of people aren't going to make their money being an athlete. Very likely, this kid will not make any money. Probably lose heaps of money trying to be an athlete.
But learn a lot of valuable life lessons.
But you learn incredible lessons. Yeah. So, like, I obviously would hope to still play sport just for the lessons. And I don't think those lessons are any better if you're really good at sport. I think if you're really suck at sport, you miss out because you just don't play.
Yeah.
And if you don't play, then you just miss out on the lessons because you're just not involved. But I don't think if being really good at sports and it coming really easily to you compared to everyone around you teaches you way better lessons than if you're struggling and you work hard at it and you get good at it. So don't really think there's like some magical benefit to the kid in their later life if they're really good at sports for some reason. But really, it's going to be taking away all the stuff that I think screws up kids.
Like vaccinations.
Yeah, so I'd be like, number one, absolutely no vaccinations. Number two,
no meat
or dairy or eggs in their diet. No milk, only soy milk. All the basics. You want to succeed. But no, in seriousness, it would be number one, like obviously the shoe situation, not putting like really bad shoes on them from a young age. That's huge.
Cause huge.
Particularly whenever you see a baby, you realize like they're like not formed yet. And you can see how easy it is to do insane damage to the baby's feet at that age. And that's a huge one. Number two would be a huge variety of sports.
Yeah.
Definitely there's no way it's like going to be playing one sport, trying to get good at it from a young age. There's like so much research to say it's a terrible, terrible idea. It's really the opposite. It's as many sports as you can possibly play.
Well, that's me, bro. I'm a fucking beast. Mm. And look how many sports I play.
It is really ideal. You want to play every single sport. And there's that really interesting study where it was like they had the German soccer team after like winning a World Cup. And they looked at basically how much unstructured playing soccer time they had when they were young and how much structured soccer playing time when they were young.
Okay.
And the better soccer players had more unstructured playing time.
Mm.
And the not as good soccer players in that World Cup had more structured playing time. So it was basically like the kids that just played soccer all day like for fun, you know, just made up their own game.
Mm.
They were more successful than the ones where like their parents were putting them in soccer camps when they were younger.
Right. Interesting.
Mm. And
that is interesting.
Yeah. You can Google it. It was like a really big study. So that stuff tells you that, like, and I see it in the park. When you got like those coaches forcing this kid to like play soccer, they're not getting any better.
Yeah.
Well, they don't want to be there.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas when they're playing with their friends, they are loving it. Like, you know, learning sidesteps that you can't teach.
Yeah.
So it's going to be that. So it's really A, like, you know, I'm going to give the kid the best diet I possibly can to give him the best chance.
Yeah.
B, just not screw him up with any sort of shoes. And 3, play a huge variety of sports.
And like screen time and exposure to electronics is probably a big thing as well, right?
Yeah, that'll be an interesting one because I've heard all different sides of it. And I think it's going to be about, like, some people are like, oh, they just don't need any technology until they're like 7.
Yeah.
But I see other people like, I see a lot of parents and it's like, it's very easy. Like, it's hard to not give them an iPad and stuff.
Yeah.
Because it gives you your time back and everything like that as well. So, I'm not 100% on that one. But yeah, that's really going to be the strategy. And interestingly as well, working on myself is apparently one of the best strategies you can do. Because kids copy, like, your postures and your habits as much as possible. So, if you're, like, walking around hunched over, flat-footed, whatever, just moving
anxious,
like shit. Yeah, like, tired. They copy those movement patterns the most. Right. So if you ever look at like you and your dad or you and your mum's movement patterns are often really similar.
Yeah.
So just working on yourself like always is one of the best strategies you can do because they're going to copy your diet, copy your movement patterns, your approach to health and fitness.
Mm.
So that's probably going to be part of it as well.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times I've seen people stand next to their dad and they adopt the exact same pose.
Crazy.
Like the same inquisitive, surprised, angry, whatever the emotion might be, that carbon copy. Yeah, no, it's going to be an interesting experiment. Do you think we'll get him on one of the episodes when he can talk?
Once he's a super athlete.
Yeah, for sure. Like interviewing him and shit. Yeah, no, you know what? That's always been like on from my side of things with sport, because I played so many sports growing up, I played way more sports than most kids. Part of the reason was because my dad owned a wholesale sporting goods company, so he just made me try out the sports. So like I can ice skate, I can play baseball, I can tennis, soccer, swimming, basketball, track, you know, I tried pretty much, man, there's like, it's more like what sports didn't I try, you know? And then when I played those sports, like if I played baseball, for example, because I played it only at like a medium level, is you play all positions. Like when you get really high level at baseball, for example, you might be like, oh, you're a pitcher, right? And all you do is pitch. Or, oh, you're a catcher, all you do is catch. But yes. No, I did some catching, I did some pitching, I did outfielding, I did infielding, first base, third base, batting, all sorts of stuff, right? And then, so within every sport, you try that. And the same with swimming. I didn't do it at a super high level, but it was like, oh, you know, let's practice all the strokes, because you're not like, you're not like a 100-meter free person. Like you do all kinds of different, you know, you're in the squad for butterfly, or now you're in the, you know, the 50 breaststroke. So you develop all the strokes evenly. And what I found is that when it comes to learning new stuff, you know, when I've picked up new sports in adulthood, like jiu-jitsu and breakdancing and... I did surfing when I was younger, but I guess...
Really CrossFit as well.
Yeah, CrossFit. I pick up skills very easily is what I find. But then I always have this level of envy, I suppose, to people that only played one sport and they still do it into their adulthood. And I'm like, fuck, if only I had just played this sport more at a high level, I'd be so much better at it. But then I watch them try and adopt another sport, which to me, it's like, you know, say basketball versus soccer. One's like all about your hands, one's all about your feet. And they're such a good basketball player. And I'm like, just in my basketball phase. And I'm like, man, I wish I could just do that. It'd be so good. Wish I just, you know, played more in my left hand when I was younger. But then I pass them a ball with their feet and they can't, they don't know what to do. And so it's like, okay, well, what do you want to do? Do you want to like be really good at one thing, or do you want the skills to kind of take on anything? That's, I think that's, you're always going to think the grass is green on the other side, right? So it's just one of those things. But no, it's an interesting observation. But yeah, having more skills, being able to do more things is generally better, right?
So much better. That
generally better.
It's crazy that you look at so many top athletes and the variety of sports they played growing up, even just like activity.
Yeah.
They usually look at just like the more activity, unsurprisingly, the better. Even that, there was a good one when we reviewed Eddie Hall. He was like one of the best swimmers in the country growing up. And that's one of the reasons they say he has like such a good aerobic base. And you obviously need an aerobic base for strongman.
Yeah,
the heart rate goes through the roof. And he was like a legit swimmer.
Right. I think there's also like a creative physical element of your brain when you try so many different movement pathways, is like you can translate so many of those pathways because you have so much natural athleticism. Whereas if you only ever did a couple of movement pathways, like freestyle or, you know, swinging a bat, like cricket or whatever, like you're a batsman, you don't have movement patterns for other sports because you only dialed in those movement patterns so much. So you just lose that. You know, some of those NFL athletes, their creative abilities are insane. Insane. Even like jiu-jitsu guys that come from like a breakdancing background, they're like, they're the most untouchable. They progress so quickly because they have so many movement patterns and so many different skills that you just wouldn't get unless you did something like breakdancing.
Yeah, like the best players are often like, they always said, like, that's the shit you can't teach.
Yeah.
And that's what they got, the shit you can't teach.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. So, I want to review a documentary. It's not a documentary, sorry. It's a new TV series that I got into. I've watched two episodes. Before we do, when it comes to all-rounded things, like we just mentioned, I think it is just a general principle of life that the more of something you get is better. And that is how we treat our nutrients. Our activated nutrients, actually. So I think it's pretty upsetting to hear that people do not still take activated nutrients. I speak to some clients at the gym. They're like, oh man, I really need to get activated nutrients. I'm like, you have been listening to the podcast for 3 years and you still haven't got it. Now is this opportunity. If you're coming into the holidays and you want to minimize some damage, if you want to wake up feeling good every day, your routines are going to be out, right? You're going to be eating all kinds of foods that you don't know. You're taking time off work. You're going to be drinking more. You need to be replacing the nutrients that your body is missing from your regular routine. So I highly recommend going to activatednutrients.com, ordering the top up, which is the greens powder, the multivitamin. Just start having it every day. I think overall, you're just going to feel a lot better during the holidays. And I think when you feel better as well, you end up just making better food choices as well. I think when you feel shit, you just keep making worse food choices. And so it compounds, right? So absolutely get on it, activatednutrients.com. Link is in the description. Offer MMP no space when you check out, and that is going to get you 20% off. Okay, Mandalorian. Yeah. seriously, if you're a Star Wars fan, nah, I wouldn't say I'm like a Star Wars fan, but I watched a lot of Star Wars when I was a kid.
Yeah, that is, the level of fan with Star Wars is a massive spectrum.
It's huge spectrum. Huge spectrum. Like, when I was a kid, like, diehard, right? Walked around in the robes with, like, fake lightsabers and shit. But now, you know, I'll watch the Star Wars movies when they come out just for a nostalgic effect, but I don't ever talk about it.
Yeah.
Ever.
You're not, like, reading online, like, alternative endings that no. could have happened in the movie.
Absolutely not. I don't play Star Wars video games anymore. Nothing, right? I sometimes forget the characters' names. But Disney has decided to jump on board like every other channel and start their own streaming service, Disney Plus. And part of the launch, like we always talk about, what is the show that gets you onto their streaming service? Yeah. For me, it's Mandalorian, which is this new Star Wars series, which is great because it's basically picking up all the different it's like kind of connecting some different storylines from the movies. And now they just have... Now they can get rid of the movies, right? Because now they have a series and they can run it for as many seasons as they want. Mm. They can keep people engaged for longer. It's basically the long play now. It seems like if you take... Because doesn't... I could get this wrong. Does Terminator have a TV series?
Don't think so. They got a new movie coming out.
The movie's out, but I'm thinking like, okay, if you take something that's at like 5 or 6 and you turn it into a series, then the franchise lives on.
Yeah.
And that's how you keep profiting off of it, right? Be like Fast and the Furious. Who's going to watch Fast and the Furious 26? Oh, no one, God. Right? But if they brought out Fast and the Furious series and they kept the characters going, that's like a really good transition to keep that franchise alive, which I think would be a really good strategy. And it seems like the strategy that Star Wars has adopted here, I'm pretty sure they're wrapping up with their last movie this year. That's what the trailers have been hinting at. That's what someone was telling me. But the series is extremely good. Look, it's worth your 7-day trial. Now, they got you because they know you're coming here for Star Wars. And if they gave it to you all at once... You would watch the whole series in one go and then you would delete your account. They're coming out every Sunday.
Mm.
So, I mean, the smart strategy would be is to, if you only want to watch the Star Wars series, let the whole series finish, buy the subscription, watch it all in 7 days, delete your subscription. At the end of the day, it's only $9 a month. So, I'm like, whatever. And so, I've watched 2 out of the 4 episodes, I believe, that are out. There's a new one coming out soon. And they're doing a fantastic job. It's crazy to see how far Star Wars has come in terms of the graphics because it was revolutionary graphics, you know, when it first came out with all the CGI and the stars and all the costumes and stuff. And now you look at it and you just think, wow, there's so much money in the costume making for this series. It's going to turn out, I reckon, in a way, kind of like a Game of Thrones because it's already got the cult following. So much money behind Star Wars. Like, the money's there, right? It's not like they're building this new series that they've got to get people to like. The fan base is already there. And if anything, they're just going to keep building more and more fans into it. And I reckon it's just going to take off. I reckon it's going to be one of the biggest series ever.
But they don't have the world's strongest man like Game of Thrones.
Not yet.
Mm.
Not yet. You never know what kind of Jedis they're fucking brewing up, dude. Season 4. Some huge Jedi with some giant lightsaber. Definitely worth a watch so far. So far, I'm going to give it a 4.5 out of 5. Couldn't really fault it. Really good story writing, really good storyline, interesting pickup. I think it's, if you know Star Wars better, you're going to enjoy it more, just obviously generally. But I don't think there's any reason why a new person can't get into this sort of series. But they will be asking a lot of questions, to be honest. It's true. If they don't know anything about Star Wars, they watch this series, they'll be like, who's that? Who's this? Who's that? But let the Star Wars fans absorb it first, and then I reckon it'll start getting a bit more mainstream. There it is. All right. We talked about a lot of things this episode. All the links are in the description. Probably the first thing I'd recommend you guys do, go to the link for the Squat Booster because it is on sale right now till the end of December. We want to keep that discount of 30% alive for you guys. Going into the holidays, maybe you want to gift it to someone. You download, you know, buy it, download the PDF, forward it to a friend, say Merry Christmas, something like that. So the link for that is in the description. The link for the daily emails is in for the description, Whoop, and then also Activated Nutrients. Links in the description. Guys, awesome. Thank you so much. We'll speak to you next week.